Thank you, Lisa. That was beautiful. What they really did when I told them that was they rolled their eyes and said, Mom, that's what you teach us every day. So, well, welcome, everybody. It's a total thrill to be here at the Pennsylvania Women's Conference. Thank you all for getting up this morning and getting yourselves here and taking this stand for yourself. Think of all the people who heard about this conference, who didn't sign up, who didn't get tickets in time or at all, and who didn't juggle their schedules to get here. You all did, which means you're already on a journey. And I want to help you with that journey today. So I'm going to get right to it because we have till 11 o'clock and there's a lot to go over. So you've come today to a workshop, reading glasses. There's just no dignity, is there? You have come to a workshop called Getting What You Want by Getting Out of Your Own Way, a season of unlikely happiness. And my goal today is to help you raise your self-awareness in a practical way that you can bring back home to you, to where you live in your daily life. And for many of you, this might be new stuff. For many of you, you might already know it. It doesn't matter. It's always nice to have a refresher. So by asking powerful questions today, my goal is to help you claim your life, see where you're stuck, and get out of victim stance thinking and into practical, creative thinking. And also to get your life to work by actively creating your life. I'm going to briefly tell you my story, which explains why I'm standing here today and why I'm not sitting in my office in Montana writing books with mice crawling around in the walls. Sorry, but it's true, country living. And then we're going to go through a brief PowerPoint that to help you see the places where most of us are stuck, and then we'll answer some powerful questions today. So I'd like you to flip to grab your conference pamphlet, and there should be an insert in there. It's a piece of paper. I want you to flip the piece of paper over and find a pen. And while you're doing this, I want you to think of something that you really, really want. Something that you really want, not material, but, you know, I don't know, like for your teenage daughter to be nice to you, or for your spouse to be kinder to you, or a greater relationship with a family of origin, or a new job, or some major change in your life, something that you really, really want, maybe a state of being that seems to escape you in your daily life, something that you really, really want. Okay, now you can also, so we're going to be using that piece of paper later in this workshop. And we'll also, if you run out of writing room, there's also the back page of your pamphlet. There was supposed to be a note section, and there isn't. So we're flying by the seat of our pants, and that's the way life is, right? So I'm going to ask everybody, once you've got your piece of paper and a pen, to close your eyes. We'll use the paper and the pen later. I just wanted to make sure you all had it, and we had the shuffle over. We're going to close our eyes. I'm going to count to three. Keep your eyes closed. And when I get to three, everybody's going to say out loud something that they really, really want. You can scream it. I had one woman scream, joy, as loud as she could. Or you can whisper it, a new job. If you're sitting next to your boss, you might want to whisper a new job. Or you can say it. But I want you to utter it because there's something very powerful that happens when we speak to what we really want. All right, and then we can open our eyes afterwards. All right, so everybody close your eyes. And on the count of three, I want you to say what you really, really want. One, two, three. Don't get a novel published. Nice job. Good job. Okay, so I'd like you now to change the word want to the word create. Because when we use the word want, we're reaching outside of ourselves for our well-being and our happiness. But when we turn that word want into the word create, suddenly we're in an empowered place. We're claiming our lives. And so this is a new practice for a lot of us. And, you know, people might kind of look at you funny if you said, I'm creating a new job for myself. I'm creating a better relationship with my mother. I'm creating a new career. But I want you to try to practice this during this conference and as you go throughout this weekend at least, and see what changes for you. When we replace the word want with the word create, a whole world opens up. I am creating trying to get a novel published. That's much more powerful than, oh, I want to get a novel published. You see the difference? There's a big difference. So I want you to change the word create to the word want to the word create. So for a very long time, I based my entire happiness on my career. And for a very long time, I did not have a career. So I wasn't very happy. I was pretty miserable. And so I decided to get a therapist to help me with this. And I was sitting in her office one day and, you know, bemoaning the fact that the publishing world wasn't publishing my novels and that I wasn't getting anywhere with my career. And she said, so let me get this straight. You base your happiness on things entirely outside of your control. And I'd thought about this so many times, but you know when somebody spins it in just a certain way, you get it and you have that light bulb? And I thought, yeah, you're right. I do base my happiness on things entirely outside of my control. And she said, that's insanity, just so you know. It's insane to live your life that way. And in that moment, I got it, and I flipped my thinking. So I'm going to tell you briefly my story. And I wrote it like a speech because I am a writer after all. So you probably don't know this. Here we go. You probably don't know this, but I have been interviewed by Barbara Walters, Jane Pauley, and Katie Couric at least 2,000 times. And I've never met any of them, except for I actually did meet Katie Couric, and I made a total idiot of myself, but that's another story. Most of these prestigious interviews occurred walking my Bichon Frise cotton, actually pronounced catton because I came from the Midwest, around the block in suburban Chicago before the age of 10. And then these interviews took place walking to and from class and college in Ohio, and then on road trips across the country, and in train cars backpacking around Europe. At first, I was being interviewed for my Golden Globe and my Oscar because, of course, I'd beaten out Meryl again. And then it was winning the Nobel Peace Prize for my indie film about the starving children in Africa my mother was always guilting me about in order to get me to eat my beans. And then it was, of course, that little thing of Pulitzer for my New York Times and international best-selling novel. In other words, I've spent my life as a massive underachiever because none of those things happened. I wrote book after book only to be rejected over and over again, and I was miserable. Why was I miserable? Because I based my entire happiness, my entire self-worth on my career success, something outside of my control. It truly was insanity. I wanted that career success like a vampire wants blood. I was suffocating in ambition because that's what made me acceptable, important, worthy, wasn't it? It's a lethal equation. And isn't it interesting that the moment I let go of all those dreams, that's when at least one of them came true, and why I have a message to share, and why I'm standing here today to tell you from experience that failure and success are myths. Failure and success are myths. It's about doing the work, not what we're most good at necessarily, but the work we most love. What comes naturally to us, where our passions lie, and living into the most powerful question I know, and that's what can I create? Not what do I want, which suggests that we're reaching outside of ourselves for our happiness, but what can I create right now that brings us the feelings we all seek, peace, happiness, fulfillment, connection? I didn't realize what misery my ambition brought me, how miserable I was in that sort of relationship with myself and the world, until I was sitting on my father's deathbed helping him die after a month of helping him fight for his life. I realized that I had been, in large, doing it for him because he was my advocate. He believed in me like no other. He was the keeper of my dreams, and he was going to die without seeing me achieve any of it. And still he held my hand one day and said, Laura, I believe in you. And I realized in that ICU room that I didn't really believe in myself. I was so caught up in trying to be a somebody that I was sabotaging my life. And when he died, I quit it all. I stopped trying to get published. I simply did the work that I was most passionate about, and that's writing. I did it because I was grieving, and it was the only way I knew how to get through my pain. I did it because I'd written through my life since I was a little girl. It was how I understood this beautiful and heartbreaking thing called life. It was my practice, my prayer, my meditation, my way of life, and sometimes my way to life. When I got totally real with myself and shed all that need to be defined by things outside of my control, that's when I wrote a book that landed on the New York Times bestseller list and was published in 9 countries and got the big book deal and traveled all over the place and went on TV and radio, etc. But in it all, I was so aware of one thing, and that's that failure is a myth. Success is a myth. It's all about doing the work with your heart in your hand, focusing on what you can control, and letting go of the rest, because we don't want to live in that insanity anymore. We're done suffering. Pain is inevitable, right? Pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. I truly believe that, and I've lived into it. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. So I flipped my thinking. I used this new philosophy in every rejection letter I got from the publishers, which usually say, "This does not meet our needs at this time." And that's what we call a good rejection letter. I used it when my husband said he didn't love me anymore and he was leaving. I used it when he came back. I used it when the marriage was finally over. I use it every day. What can I control, or better, what can I create right there at my kitchen sink or wherever you are in your life, in your office, on the sidelines of your kids' soccer games, wherever you are? What can I create? 3 small breaths, 1.5 and call it good? Something that's attainable, so you set yourself up for success. A cup of tea, a walk with your dog around the block, and no, I don't do interviews anymore when I walk my dog. I sing because I know that my joy is inside me. Like Michelangelo believed that the sculpture was in the stone and it was his job to set it free. That's what my relationship with myself has to be if I am committed not to suffer. I have to be my best advocate. I have to deem myself worthy. I have to find the power to reinvent myself, refuel myself, and grow in gratitude and grit and maybe grace, if I could ever figure out what that word really means. No one else can do it for me, and that's what I want to help you see today. If you're stuck and if you're a seeker, and you all are seekers because you're here. So in the words of the great Willy Wonka, you are the music makers and you are the dreamer of dreams. So before we get to the interactive part of the workshop, I want to introduce you to the places I think that most of us are in our own way. So in order to step into getting what we want by creating what we can create, we need to become aware of where we're stuck. The first one is our inner dialogue. Becoming aware of how we talk to ourselves in our minds. Really pay attention to that, because once you do, you'll be horrified. Most of us wouldn't speak to our worst enemies the way that we speak to ourselves in our own minds, especially if you ever go bathing suit shopping at Target. That is not a good idea, not without sunglasses on. You can leave your inner critic at the door at the Target trying on room. I am not talking about the conscience, okay? The conscience keeps us from lying, cheating, stealing, and jumping off cliffs, right? But we don't need to bully ourselves into making those good choices. The inner critic has no real place, and all too often we confuse that and we think that we have to bully ourselves to keep ourselves in line, and it's simply not true. So I'd like to introduce you to somebody who lives in my head. Her name is Sheila, and I'm sorry if your name is Sheila. I apologize. I don't know where I got that. Probably all my children in the 80s, my evil twin sister Sheila, I don't know. But in order to become aware of my inner critic, I had to name her, and I suggest that you do the same. At first, I thought I had to exile her like some sort of a criminal. But then I realized that if I was at war with her, then I was at war with myself because I created her. So I started looking at her like a scared little girl who lives inside of me. If my child came in the middle of the night and said, "Mommy, I'm so scared. I just had this horrible nightmare." And if she started ranting and raving, I wouldn't kick her out, would I? No, I would say, "Come to Mama. It's okay. Let's snuggle." And guess what? She quiets down. So that's how I deal with my inner critic now. I love her. And hopefully sort of love her into submission, as it were. And guess what? That brings, once we get into that awareness of the inner critic, that gets us into a whole world of yes and possibility. And yet so much of our lives is spent living in the world of no. I can't do it. I don't know how. No way. Not possible. Why would we be living in the world of no? Why wouldn't we be in the world of possibility, in the world of yes? I think it's because we're in a story, and we think the story serves us. And usually the story is something negative, and it's spun by that inner critic. Men always leave me in the end. My dreams will never come true. I'm not the kind of person who ever gets blank, fill in the blank with whatever it is in your life, a raise, a promotion, an award, affirmation, validation. I'm a loser, I'm a failure. That's where most of us hang out a lot of the time. What the stories we tell ourselves usually have in common is this, emotional victimhood, so that we walk around all the time with our hands out and our fingers pointed so that we don't have to take responsibility for our own well-being, for our happiness. Happiness, that sounds too hard. We're in a story and we're used to it. And why would we do that? Because there's a payoff. There is a payoff. We get to be right. See, my boyfriend left me. I'm right. Men always leave in the end. See, I didn't get that promotion. I'm right. I never get the accolades I deserve. I got really sick of making myself right for making myself wrong. Really sick of it. It's another form of insanity, and I quit it. And it changed everything for me. The moment I took responsibility for my own happiness and flipped my thinking, everything changed. My dreams started coming true. And that's because I was in the world of possibility and the world of yes. Okay, so this is the gap. I'd like to dig deeper into this concept of emotional victimhood. It's playground politics. How often do you hear your kid or yourself or a colleague or a friend say, "He makes me so mad," or "She makes me feel so guilty," or "He makes me so sad"? It's actually not possible, right? It's not possible. Our emotions are always our choice. Nobody can make you feel mad or sad or even guilty or even happy. I can't take a serum of sad and inject it into your arm and make you feel sad. So really get aware of that. You'll catch yourself saying it, "Oh, this makes me so angry." We choose. There is a gap between the things that people say and do to us and how we react to them. It's different physically. If somebody punches you in the face, you're likely to get a black eye. But our emotions are our choice. So what if somebody told you that when you were a little kid? Can you imagine if somebody told you that when you were a little kid? "Actually, honey, Sally can't make you feel guilty." Wouldn't you have lived your life a different way? I know I would have. So there's a gap between the things that people say and do to us and our emotional reaction to them. I can't say it enough. And I want to widen that gap and powerfully choose my emotional reactions. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with feeling mad or sad or guilty. I just want to be in charge of my emotions instead of feeling like they're in charge of me. So in other words, if I want to freak out, I want to powerfully choose to freak out. Feels much better, rather than the freak out choosing me. Why? Because I don't want to suffer. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. And so start a new awareness around this. You are responsible for your emotions. Your emotions are your choice. All right, this one's fun. "Pass the salt. This does not meet our needs at this time. I don't love you anymore." So we're talking about dealing with rejection here, and this is big stuff. Most of us are never trained in how to deal with rejection. I've had a lot of it, and I've cut my teeth on it, and it hasn't always been pretty, that's for sure. So I've learned to practice on something easier than I don't love you anymore or this does not meet our needs at this time. It's too easy to hear words of rejection and assign them meaning that will bring only suffering, and that quite probably are simply reasons that are not true. The meaning that we assign things like that often are just lies that we've made up. To hear "I don't love you anymore" and have it mean that you are unlovable, or to hear "this does not meet our needs at this time" and have it mean that you're unemployable or untalented, or you're going to end up in a van down by the river. That's what Sheila tells me. This is new news to many of us, and so let's go easy on ourselves here, okay? This is about retraining our minds. This is a new awareness around how we assign meaning to the things people say and do, and how we stay outside of suffering, how we stay in a place of being responsible for our own well-being. So let's not practice on the hard stuff. Let's practice on past the salt. Okay? So let's say you make this beautiful meal. You spend all day on this thing. You go out and you buy organic, expensive food and ingredients, and you even follow a recipe, and you invite a bunch of people over for dinner, and they sit down, and somebody takes a bite out of your beautiful food and says, "Pass the salt." We can have that "pass the salt" mean all kinds of things. We can go into rage or insult, like, "How dare that jerk? I spent all day and hundreds of dollars on this meal, and it's I freaking made turducken, okay?" How dare you, right? Or we can have it be something more like shame, like, "Oh, wow, well, I've never been very much of a cook, and I worked too hard, and I didn't really give this meal the time that I needed, and I'm no gastronomic goddess, and I'm basically a bad person." You can have "pass the salt" mean I'm a bad person in about 2 seconds flat, depending on how well-developed your inner critic is. But what if, so that's suffering, right? Being insulted or being angry, there's a low level of suffering there. What if, actually, we just think, "Hey, that guy really likes salt." And you pass him the salt, or that gal or guy, and you pass that person the salt, and that's it. You're not suffering. Practice on "pass the salt," and that will help with other larger rejections. So what's the payoff for getting our pants in a bunch? Because we spend a lot of time with our pants in a bunch. What's the payoff? Nothing, except for you get to be right, and you suffer because of it. Is that worth it? I don't think so. Because how does that make you feel, making yourself right for making yourself and other people wrong? It's exhausting. All right, so now we're going to get to the interactive part of this. And what I really am hoping, I'm going to run you through three slides where I think that people truly are stuck, and how we can start moving into powerful questions around these places instead of powerless questions. So what's the difference between a powerful question and a powerless question? Well, a powerless question usually begins with, "Why is it that I can never," or why is it "she always," that kind of stuff. "What's wrong with me that I," blah, blah, blah. A powerful question is more like, "What can I create? Do you hear the possibility in that? What can I create right now? I can create being miserable, or I can create actually having a serene, calm, beautiful moment. I would like to choose the latter, and I'm not always good at it." So each of these categories is under that powerful umbrella question of, "What can I create that is in my control right now in this moment?" And I'm going to walk you through each category, and I want you to write the category down as I go. So this one would be the inner critic. So on the back of that piece of paper, or on the back page of your pamphlet, we're going to have three different headings. So I want you to write "inner critic." And here we're going to characterize our inner critic. So the idea is that we could spend a whole weekend. I lead writing retreats in Montana and elsewhere, and we spend the whole weekend doing this sort of thing. But we've got less than half an hour probably here today. So instead of answering long questions, I want you just to write down a couple words for each of the powerful questions underneath each of these categories. And then tonight, when you get back home, if you have a window before you go to bed or sometime over the weekend, I want you to flesh out the answers to these questions. really flesh them out in your journal. You don't need to share them with anybody. This is for you, okay? So inner critic, whose voice is she speaking in? Just write it down. Use your knee-jerk reaction. Trust your instincts here. Your mother, your boss, your big brother when you were 5 years old, yourself, who knows? But write down, whose voice is she speaking in? Okay, and then when is she loudest? Is it, you know, over the holidays? Is it in the Target fitting room? When is she loudest? What does she say to you? You're unworthy. You're fat. You're ugly. Remember, our inner critic is really not very nice. So what does she say to you? What's her story? Start getting aware of it. Just jot down a couple words for now. And again, you're gonna go home, hopefully, and flesh these things out. What would happen if you treated her like a scared little girl that you love? What would happen if you treated her like a scared little girl that you love? So just take a couple more seconds here just to make sure you get at least the questions down and a couple words for each question. Okay. So now the next slide is the flow. What do you most like to do? Now remember, this is not necessarily what you most are good at. It's what you most like to do. So under the write the word the flow, and then underneath it write, what do I most like to do? How often do you do it? Ask me when the last time I got on my horse was. A long time ago. And I beat myself up about it every day because I pay for those horses. When you start to answer that question honestly, how often do I do the thing that I really most like to do? That's when you get aware of the incongruencies in your life. That's where you can start isolating where you're stuck and how to get unstuck. But first we have to be aware of it, and we have to be honest with ourselves by asking powerful questions. Can you build a career around it? Can you bring it into your daily life? Maybe the answer is no, but dream a little bit here. Can you bring this thing that you love into your daily life? Could you build a career around it? Doesn't have to be yes, but again, think possibility. Think yes. Start to open up your mind to this world of yes, getting your life to work, getting unstuck. And at the very least, if you can at least write these questions down, then you'll have a guide when you get back home and you can refer to them and really, again, flesh them out for yourself as a reference to help you, especially in really hard times. Okay, the next one is practical creativity. People get scared of the word creativity. They think that you have to have a glue gun in your hand and make a decorative holiday wreath, and you don't. We are all creative all the time. You chose what you put on your body this morning. You choose the words that come out of your mouth. Our whole life is about creating our moment, okay? And there's nothing wrong with glue guns and decorative wreaths. But I'm talking about creating your life and getting it to work. So when you are facing hardship, ask yourself, what can I create? It doesn't have to be anything grandiose. This is the main question here. What are three simple things that you can do when you are having a hard time? Simple things, right? Not like run a marathon or make turducken, Google it. But what are three easy things to do? Three deep breaths. Lisa was saying to me on the phone that counting to 10 is the most underrated way of therapy possible. Count to 10, three deep breaths, make yourself a cup of tea, walk your dog. Choose practical and attainable things so that you set yourself up for success and completion. Okay, now, this one is, I think, actually, you know what I'm going to do this one. This is the self versus the self. Because we are, for the most part, in a war with ourselves on some level. And to get aware of what that war is like for you is so powerful. So what do you lead with when you first meet somebody? I had a friend who said to me one time, within the first 5 minutes of meeting a new person, I always tell them that my mother died a tragic death. Why do we do that? I have something I always say, which is, you know, I live in Montana. I play it like some sort of a card. It's the strangest thing. Get in touch with what it is that you lead with. And if it's a negative thing, quit it. Lead with a positive thing. And where are you in a fight in your life? Maybe it's, you know, I signed up for a new gym membership and I haven't once gone and it's been a year. Not that that happened to me or anything. What do you resist that you know is good for you? This one is big. You know, what do you resist that you know is good for you? Maybe we know how important it is to eat a healthy breakfast. I hardly ever eat a healthy breakfast. I'm in a war with myself every day about this. Where do you tell yourself that you are not enough just the way you are? I'd like you to hang out with this one for a long time in your journal, if possible. Where do you tell yourself that you are not enough just the way you are? I once had a friend put a little post-it on my office desk. I also have a desk like Lisa does, that full of affirmations and photographs. It looks like a shrine to hope and creativity. And she was visiting me, and she wrote on a little post-it right on my computer screen, "You are enough." It was the greatest gift. I still have it. You are enough. Okay, so now we're going to get to the last one. This is the statement of intention. When I finally realized that I probably wasn't going to gain any career success in the field of my passion, I wrote a statement of intention because I had to figure out what it was, why I was doing this every day. Why am I staring at this blank screen and making stuff up about people and trying to understand this beautiful and heartbreaking thing called life? And I wrote, "I write to shine a light on a dim or otherwise pitch black corner to provide relief for myself and others." And that was a surprise to me, to provide relief to myself and others. I didn't realize I was coming from a place of service. And that's when I started writing books that actually helped people, that got published in 9 countries. I've heard from thousands of people all over the world. Everybody wants to know that they're not alone. We want to understand that we are part of the collective we. That's when everything changed for me. So I want you to write a one-sentence mission statement about your life by taking that word that you used at the beginning of this workshop. Whatever it is that you said that you wanted, I want you to return to that word, and I want you to write down right now, "I am creating blank." Write it down. And then when you get home, I want you to put it on a piece of paper. It can be a beautiful piece of paper. It can be a little sticky note. And put it someplace that's comfortable for you. If your office freaks you out, if your computer feels like a heaving monster with a heartbeat and fangs, don't put it in your office or near your computer. Put it on your nightstand. Or if you love to cook, put it near your stove or on your windowsill over your kitchen sink. If you're always in your car, maybe put it in your car, not on your steering wheel. I am creating blank. All right, so we have gone over a lot of information. You guys have gotten a lot of information. Raise your hand if you'd like me to go back to those slides so that you can write down those questions or take a picture of them. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the first one, inner critic. And that's a great idea. People are taking pictures of these powerful questions. Feel free to do that. I'm going to be signing books directly after. And if you want to stay connected with me and find out more about the retreats that I lead, more about the work that I do, come down to the book signing, and we can share contact information. The main thing, here's the second one, the flow. The main thing that I care about for you is that you take this stand for your life and to get your life to work. You are already on a journey, and I applaud you for that. Journey on. Thank you very much.
Let's all give Laura a big round of applause one more time. All the way from Montana. Go home and ride that horse.
Okay.
Laura mentioned that she's signing books. The bookstore is located at Exhibit Hall, EXB? Exhibit Hall B, I guess? From 11 to 11:30. I'm not sure what time it is right now because I don't have my phone on. Ah, plenty of time. All right, so get in line and meet Laura. Thanks for coming out.